हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर शिव सरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे जय रघुनाथ जी।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं प्रचोदयं धीरये। We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text number 12. Tachradhanaimunayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pasyanti atmani atmanam bhakti shruta grihitaya. The seriously inquisitive student of our sage, well equipped with the knowledge and detachment, realized the absolute truth by rendering devotional service in terms of what he has heard from the Vedanta Shruti. The absolute truth is realized in full by the process of devotional service to the Lord Vasudeva, or personal deity of Godhead, who is the full-fledged absolute truth. Brahman is his transcendental bodily effulgence, and Paramatma is his partial representation. As such, Brahman or Paramatma realization of the absolute truth is but a partial realization. There are four different types of human beings: the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, and the devotees. The karmis are materialistic, whereas the other three are transcendental. The first-class transcendentalists are devotees who have realized Supreme Person. The second-class transcendentalists are those who have partially realized the plenary portion of the Absolute Person. And the third-class transcendentalists are those who have barely realize the spiritual focus of the Absolute Person. As stated in Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literatures, the Supreme Person is realized by devotional service, which is backed by full knowledge and detachment from material association. We have already discussed the point that devotional service is followed by knowledge and detachment from material association. As Brahman and Paramatma realization are imperfect realization of the absolute truth, so the means of realizing Brahman and Paramatma, for example, the path of jnana and yoga, are also imperfect means of realizing the absolute truth. Devotional service, which is based on the foreground of full knowledge combined detachment from material association, and which is fixed by oral reception of the Vedanta Shruti, is the only perfect method by which the seriously inquisitive student can realize the absolute truth. Devotional service is not, therefore, mean for the less intelligent class of transcendentalists. There are three classes of devotees, namely first, second, and third class. The third class devotees are neophytes who have no knowledge and are not detached from material association. but who are simply attracted by the preliminary process of worshipping the deity in the temple, are called material devotees. Material devotees are more attached to the material benefit than transcendental profit. Therefore, one has to make the finite process from progress from the position of material devotional service to the second class devotional position. In the second class position, the devotee can see four principles in the devotional line, namely the personality of Godhead, his devotees, the ignorant, the envious. One has to rise himself at least to the stage of the second class devotee and thus became eligible to know the absolute truth. This is half of the purport, Maharaj. Can I
continue?
Oh, okay.
Let's say something here, otherwise you may forget points here. So the verse is then pointing out this aspect of the seriously inquisitive rather than just the inquisitive, because we see is that of the four kinds of people that surrender to Krishna, one of them is the inquisitive, but those four are known as neophyte devotees. So seriously inquisitive means then they want to know, go beyond just, you know, having their, you know, some answers, you know, some satisfaction that may come from having some appreciation or understanding. And but they actually want to actually know. So then they move on to that state of the jnani, means that, you know, of the four kinds that surrender, not the jnani, means of the transcendentalist there. And so then they see is that the personality of Godhead is there. We're the soul, we're a servant, and it's the natural position that we as servant would surrender unto him. That makes the jnani. So much of the time we mix the two, the jnani of the platform, well, you know, means that there's karmis and jnanis, that the jnani meaning that they're intellectual and everything like that, you know, scholarly. You know, and naturally inquisitive tends to be scholarly or at least thoughtful. So then much of the time thought, well, I was scholarly, I was looking, but that generally would be the inquisitive. Someone who knows who the personality of Godhead is, knows himself as the servant and sees his duties as servant of God, and he surrenders, that's what the Bhagavad Gita is talking about as the jnani, as that fourth group. Because we see, I think Prabhupada explains in that purport, that having come to Krishna consciousness, however you have come, then, you know, especially if one's on those lower platforms, arta, artarti, jigyasu, then one needs to come to the platform of the jnani, because then you understand who you are as the jiva in your relationship with God. And coming to that platform, then you can become steady in devotional service, right? And come to the Madhyama platform. So that's why you see, I don't know about now how it's preached, but at least in those earlier days, then, you know, some of the first things that someone who came to Krishna consciousness learned was about how Krishna is the Supreme Person, we're the jiva, you know, we're not this body. Our relationship with God is that of a servant. And the process is through chanting Hare Krishna. Then one does whatever one does to please Krishna and develop love for Krishna. So this then gives you the platform understanding of the jnani, you know, and then from that platform, you, if that mood progresses, then you'll get to the Madhyama platform. But if you don't focus on that, it's just you stick to some sentiment, or you're still worried about your monetary difficulties, or worried about your emotional difficulties, or simply worried about certain, you know, knowledge that you want to know and are curious about. and that. And once you kind of get some satisfaction there, you might go away. That's the danger. That's why Prabhupada says that coming to that platform, the jnani, is important, because then you know you're in Krishna consciousness because of who you are constitutionally, who Krishna is, and your relationship. And then functioning in that platform, even as a neophyte, that will bring one, you know, forward through the process, and it will then situate you on the platform of the Madhyama, you know, so the second class platform. So there's that, then you see God, you see the devotees, you see the, as probably mentioned there, the ignorant means they don't know who God is or who they are, but they're not against, right? So they're not the atheists. So, you know, or, you know, another term for it probably uses is the innocent. They don't know, they're in ignorance, but they're innocent means that they, you know, they're not, they don't have any other particular idea. And so when you present Krishna consciousness, then they can take up. And those who are not interested in Krishna consciousness, that atheistic, that's avoided. And so then by that platform, then one can move forward. One may say, oh, why that? We just preach to anybody. But the point is spending your time with the atheists, then they come up with so many arguments and they just keep going. One, it's a waste of time. And two, you might get distracted. While for the innocent, then your time being spent in giving them Krishna consciousness, at least they've heard and all that, and they try, and as much as they can come forward, they try to come forward. And, you know, so maybe they'll come forward nicely in this lifetime, but devotional service, or they've heard and acknowledged, and it sounds very nice and appreciative, and maybe sometime later they'll take up again. You know, and then the devotees, if one doesn't see, is that it's only through association of devotees that you actually advance in Krishna consciousness. That's the only process. Means, you know, and that process, what are you doing in that association? Then, you know, in the verse, in the purport, I think Prabhupada mentioned twice about that, in that association, you're going to hear about the proper knowledge of Vedanta philosophy. You know, and so you actually understand what's your relationship, who you are, what's the material world. So that the real Sampanya Jnana you hear. And then Abhideya process and the goal, right? You know, so the what do you call it? Yeah. So then it's a natural, it naturally moves forward. Otherwise, you can get distracted by all the nice things that are being presented by the atheists, you know, and just because they can speak nicely, right? So nowadays, those who are good in media, they progress, you know, on the material platform in the present environment, because they know how to, you know, interact and communicate and present things and you know, just psychologically how it works. But it doesn't mean that they're innocent, right? So much of the time is because of their abilities in these things. Unless they're seeing that in context of God, then the tendency they'll use it for their own position, power, and authority. So, you know, if we get distracted by those who have opulence, you know, in the way of you know, either facility, you know, any of the six opulences, then we can get distracted and we remain one on the material platform. You know, as Prabhupada mentioned, the neophyte means that they're materialistic. They're interested more in the materialistic aspect and outcomes than in the spiritual. They're interested in spiritual. That's why they're devotees. But because of habit, they're allowing the material elements to be more prominent. But by association with the devotees and by chanting Hare Krishna, worshiping the deity, then they become purified and they start to move forward, where they come to the point where the material is not more important than the spiritual. They become fixed in the spiritual. That's then the Dridha Shraddha, the fixed faith. Then that's the Madhyama. right? That's the beginning of the Madhyama. And so it's just a matter of time and association. But if one's not careful, one can get distracted and then start thinking that these material things are very important. And only because of them, then the spiritual will go nicely. Right? So that's very important to note, is that means we always try to make the best circumstances, you know, for doing devotional service. Like, let's say if you're cooking, you always try to get the best arrangements in the kitchen. You know, if you need particular utensils or ingredients or you know, knowledge of a particular techniques or recipes, you try to get your best. But the point is that's for getting the best result for Krishna. It's not that these things create devotion. It's not because I have this new fabulous, you know, 350 euro, you know, frying pan like that, that therefore my devotion in the kitchen is going to increase. No. It's because of your devotion to Krishna that you get the pan, because you know that this will cook more nicely for Krishna. And I have the ability to use it. Someone doesn't know how to cook, what does it matter? You could give them a tin can and it doesn't mean that they'll cook any better or worse. Right? So with that, you can use that. You have that ability. You have the resources. And so then you get this. And then now you can cook. You can use that in Krishna's service. But it's not that it will generate devotion. You know, it's not that, oh, yes, no, I just got a gram of Spanish saffron, so now my devotion will increase. No, it doesn't work like that. It's that bhakti generates bhakti. You know, it's just like they say money makes money. They don't say a big institution makes money, or you know, having a nice computer makes money, or a big spot. No, they say money brings money. So the same, because devotion brings devotion. So, and where do you get that devote? You get that from the association of devotees. They have devotion. By being with them, then you start to emulate that. So you copy that. You know, that's why the beginning stages, you have the nama bas, there's copying. Reflecting, copying, all these different things. And then by doing that, then bhakti is pleased, and then you get bhakti. So you're engaged in bhakti by the grace and under the direction of the devotees, and then being in touch with that chit potency, now you can continue to act in the principle of bhakti. So bhakti becomes the most important. So that, again, the seriously inquisitive devotee means the one who actually wants bhakti. He wants to come to go beyond karma, jnana, and yoga and to bhakti. And then who is even wants to go beyond the neophyte stage where the worshiping God for the material benefits, he wants to go to the point of worshiping God because, you know, at least that's his natural position, and that he wants to please God. Then they go, and then from that platform, then they'll get a taste and attachment and move on to, you know, the transcendental position. You know, being steady in that. So that's the thing, is that these others, as you notice, when the explanation, it always comes top down. We always tend to go bottom up. But actually, you know, in there, bhakti is the devotee, is the actual. He knows the personality of Godhead. He knows his representations. He knows his expansion as Brahman. The yogis only know his representation in Brahman. The jnanis only know the Brahman. The karmis don't know any of it. They know there's an absolute truth, and that by pleasing the absolute, I'll get my material benefits. So they're willing to do that. And then when they take up devotional service, they will tend to have that element. Then they'll start doing karma yoga. It will be more prominent. But at one point, it has to come that it's about bhakti yoga. That becomes the prominent. In other words, you're in the beginning, karma yoga, jnana yoga, you're engaging those elements because of our conditioning. And then, you know, in the Lord's service. But at some point, it switches to, it's about the Lord's service. And you use your nature, which may work in the field of karma or jnana or both, in Krishna's service. It goes the other way around, right? Like the neophyte thinks, we'll make this fabulous kitchen, then we can cook nice for Krishna. You know, so they may start like that, but after a while, then they start to see, no, it's the devotion that makes the cooking nice for Krishna. But at least they started there. There was enthusiasm. That's why they can do that, go in, do something, make it really nice for Krishna. But it's not actually the point, but that they're doing it in connection with Krishna, then it's devotional service, they get purified, until they come to the point it's actually, it's just the bhakti and the cooking that actually Krishna appreciates. Right? Because whatever pot we have here, it's never going to be as good as what's in Mother Jashoda's kitchen. You don't have to worry. You know, whatever she's got is better. Right? Just coming in India, it means I remember people talking about not so much their generation, but the generation previous to them, you know, in the 70s. So it means their parents or grandparents like that. Rice, the standard was you cooked rice in a gold pot. There's something about gold and rice. It goes together. So sometimes people, when they don't have a gold pot, you know, they'll put the gold bangles inside the rice when they cook it, right? And for cooking your sabjis and all that, you use a silver pot. It means it's made of solid silver. You know, it'll have some tin and some other things, so it won't be too soft. So it'll be what you call sterling silver. I think in the West, you call it sterling silver. You know, what they make jewelry out of and things like that. So you have a karai or a wok, you know, like this big, you know, with the handles, and it's solid silver. So it'll be some kilos. But back then, silver was, you know, the essential items were easily available. So sabjis were cooked in the silver pot, rice was cooked in the gold pot, you know. So that solid silver pot, there's nothing on today's market, whether it's the stainless steel, high grade and that, or the carbon steel, or it's ceramic, or it's this, or it's that, it's never going to be as good as that. You know, like that. And this is what we got here. Now you can imagine how well they know how to do things for Krishna, you know, in other ages and then in the spiritual world. So whatever it is, it's out of devotion that they have such nice utensils. But it's not the utensils create the devotion. Now, you know, and as I said, us, you know, because we tend to look at things external, so we might, in the beginning, try to get all nice things for Krishna, but that's the point, is we're doing it for Krishna. That's the excellence of it. That we use our intelligence to, what's the best kitchen I can make for Krishna? That then becomes the devotion. The kitchen itself is just something that's used. You know, it's just like Sadharma is the relationship of the living entity with the Lord. Dharma is then the conditioned nature that the living entity has that's engaged in the process of Sadharma. Right? So that's why you see is that the devotee is superior because he sees Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan as based on the Vedanta. So that also then rules out the jnanis, because you can say, well, the Mayavadis also use Vedanta. But they only understand Brahman. They don't understand Paramatma. It means they don't know. They don't have no idea of the Jiva and Paramatma, or actually what Brahman is. They're actually, you know, I mean, they know more than most people. And they'll be, you know, there's more knowledge, more detachment. But they think Paramatma is the material feature. He's the absolute, you know, he's knowledge and the mode of goodness. And the Jiva is just a transformation of Maya. When you think of yourself separate from Brahman, then you become the Jiva. And when the Jiva becomes a knowledge, then you get Ishwara. So they think they create, you know, Paramatma. It's really distorted. So, but they say everything's Brahman, but then where did this illusion come from that created the Jiva and you have Ishwara and the material energy? They can't explain any of that. So even their understanding of Brahman is limited because Brahman doesn't stand on its own. Brahman is coming from Krishna. So the yogis understand more. There's Brahman, and then there's the Paramatma feature. But then, unless they move forward to devotion, they want to merge into the existence, like the impersonalists in the Paramatma, or they get distracted before they come to that point by the yoga siddhis, and so then they're engaged in that level. Okay, hey, Tatvaji, you had a question.
Jai Maharaj, could you a little elaborate this aspect of taking communication and then they get a certain result? I think it's some teaching of political science, but does it have a Vedic root, that in order to like ISKCON, it's also propagating, it has Radio Krishna.
Yes, yes.
Different, so what should be. We have now one idea in Finland. It's not mine, but yesterday one devotee called the idea of Radio Krishna. But, how would I say, it should be not the short-term things, these things. So what should be learned from the past and what should be learned from this communication, which is more the mundane level, to make it like an progressively expanding? Normally things are just happening. First, they are big, loud, openings, and then in the end, nothing is heard, so that it would go the other way. So what is the historical learning? And is it still the other thing? Is it Niti Shastra, or is it just, it can be what it is, Is it just a mundane political science?
Niti is mundane. Niti is mundane, but it's based on the Veda. Niti is what would you call? There's a name for it. It just means practical knowledge, practical wisdom, common sense, these kind of things. But sorry,
logic much?
Logic? No, not logic as much. Because logic will be a process of analyzing. But I think common sense is kind of there, but it's common sense that's based on the Veda. So because common sense is there, like your grandfather may have some common sense from growing up and having experience, but then it may get lost. So the Veda is documenting all this common sense so that, what's useful, so that we can use it in Krishna's service, right? So that's the point. So the niti just means it's common sense. So even to the point that nowadays, many of them, if somebody's good at something or argue, you could say that there's some niti elements, or he's using as much as he mentioned some logic, but most likely more rhetoric, a technique of winning an argument. But nowadays, you see these things aren't necessarily based on logic or even on facts. So it wouldn't even qualify technically as niti, right? So you'd have to see how you're using it. They could be starting there. But now I would say even more important than that aspect of starting with the niti is go back one step, is that the communication, as we pointed out, is, for preaching and teaching and educating, it's about communication and how well you can communicate with the particular audience you have, then the better the effect. So you could say as well, what we're doing and what the modern media and politicians are doing, it's actually the same thing. You could say mechanically, yes, but the point is when we communicate, what do we communicate? We communicate what's come from, as the purport mentions, from the Vedanta, as heard from the great acharyas. So we communicate that, while in the contemporary or the modern scenario, then they're speaking whatever is going to give them opportunities for control and enjoyment. What's ever going to get them gain and safety. So the difference is one has a material motive, the karmis, what you're generally dealing with. It's very rare you're dealing with a jnani, who knows that they're the soul and not the body, and about Brahman and all that. So even then, they're trying to get that. They're communicating that. Like on Tapaloka, that's what they'll be communicating. You go to Brahmaloka, and that's where the yogis and Hiranyagarbhis and others hang out. And so they'll be communicating that. But the point is then what the acharyas are giving is communicating the absolute truth, you know, Bhagavan, the supreme absolute truth. So it comes down to that. Yes, it's talking just like everybody's driving a car, but we're driving it for Krishna and others are driving it for themselves. Right? So therefore, communication, it's not about communication. Just that is about what you're communicating, where you're getting it from. So if you're getting your communication, technique of communication, from how Prabhupada speaks, how the acharyas speak, how Krishna is talking to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, how the different personalities in Bhagavatam are speaking, you know, how we see Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is speaking in Chaitanya Charitamrita or the Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion, that kind of communication, then yes, then that's working very well. That is, as Tatvaji was pointing out, that's sustainable. But if we're only communicating, you know, what is the particular contemporary, you know, socio-political, economic kind of angle, then that's going to be temporary because that always changes. You know, as I mentioned before, the platform you could say today, the moderate conservative in America was, you know, the very dynamic liberal 50 years ago. So it's always changing. The positions change, you know, like that. So it's not sustainable, not as far as how you say, gaining the absolute truth is. If it's about making money and all that, yeah, you move with the time and everything like that. That'll work, you know, so politically, economically, socially, then these modern techniques are fine. But if you actually want to present the absolute truth, and ourselves have a method of thought pattern and everything like that, where you're actually using the Vedanta and you're using the logic, the Nyaya, you know, you're using the Dharma Shastra, you're using the, you know, as that to point out, you know, the Niti, you know, to practically apply in your life based on Vedanta. That's something that's sustainable. You can think about and deepen your understanding, elevate your consciousness. But if you're simply, you know, worried about what, you know, Washington Post is, their angle and perspective is, and we have to adjust with that, that's going to be temporary. You know, because if you look at themselves, things today, they're saying one thing. You go back 10, 20 years, the articles they wrote were exactly opposite of what, now what they're criticizing today is what they wrote, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So following them, that's what Prabhupada mentions, is the blind leading the blind. And then you all end up in a ditch like that, because they don't know where they're going. No idea. Like that. So one has to be careful. So if you're saying like a radio station, if you're doing like a, you know, Krishna radio station, just have to see how to present, you know, topics about Krishna in a way that is going to be appreciated by the particular audience that you're trying to gain. Because I don't know, before there were so many Krishna radio stations. Italy had one. What was it called? Yeah, I don't remember, but whatever. I think they had one, and America had this one, and that. There's Ben. I don't know. They may still be going, but I'm not sure. But it's if you can do it, it's a nice idea like that. It's a very nice idea. You just have to see, choose your audience. So you have to go for your audience rather than volume, right? It means if you're running the radio station as a business, then you naturally want to at least maintain, if not increase. So you're going to have to run the station in a way that it's popular, right? And so people will continue, you know, listening. But if you're running it as an element for preaching, then you're going to have to actually educate the audience about the absolute truth. And so then, you know, depending upon how you present or what you present, you may have a broader audience or a more narrow audience, or you have different kind of programs. So some people will listen to, you know, let's say stories about Mahabharata, they'll listen to that, but they may not listen to your philosophy, you know, program sections and stuff. So it's just a matter of that. So it's not about that communication. It's just like cooking. It's not that karmis are cooking and we're cooking. So it's, what's the difference? We're cooking for Krishna. They're not. So devotees, then they are, you know, like in this case, if they're running a radio station for Krishna and it's meant for preaching, then they'll be talking about Krishna. You know, they won't be distracted by all new agey, this, that, blah. Does that make sense? Or you're running it as a business, that's how you maintain yourself in Krishna consciousness. So you run it as a business and you make it successful. You know, it's not necessarily about, it's about how you are seeing it in context with Krishna. It's not necessarily your audience, you know, does. It's just like any business. You know, you sell potatoes. You're selling potatoes. And you're not selling potatoes only to those who are going to use it for Krishna. You're just selling potatoes, right? Because then you maintain yourself and you're a devotee. Does that make sense? So you're going to have a devotee, means the karmi is running a radio station just for themselves in material consciousness, for material profits, to continue the material consciousness. You may have a devotee running a radio station and he's doing it to maintain himself so he can be a devotee. Right? And then you have some who run a radio station or podcast, you know, because they want to be, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, and they don't want to upset anybody and this and that. So they, you know, they may not talk that much about Krishna. Right. And so then, or not at all, they'd be also indirect. And so then, yes, it's nice, but, you know, it doesn't really get anywhere. Then there'll be those who will talk more about Krishna, but they'll take any opinion. So they'll be talking, they'll be hearing from, you know, serious devotees. They'll be hearing from you know, new age people. They'll be hearing from, you know, all varieties of anybody who is into something that they would call spiritual, you know, the overall umbrella. And then they don't necessarily benefit anybody in any really serious way. So that's why the purport was mentioning those who are actually serious, right? Like that, because that you're engaged, it means anybody who's into new age, you know, they're kind of committed to that. Some spirituality comes up here and there, they're quite happy to hear it. But then at the next moment, they're off discussing about, you know, other mundane things, you know, like that on you know, whatever it is that they're into these days, you know, tarot cards or this or that or whatever. And so it's all equal. Talking about Krishna and talking about their tarot cards are all just part of the same picture. You know, so it's like what Prabhupada meant in the purport is the neophyte. Then for them, the material is actually more prominent than the spiritual. That's how you tell the difference. In the beginning, it'll be more material. Then there'll be some Krishna, then there'll be more Krishna, and then Krishna's more prominent than the material. That's when you see the Madhyama now. Right? So someone joins in that, they're interested in Krishna consciousness, but they still, their whole life, nothing changes, really. But they come to the temple, but after a while, you start seeing changes in their life. It means Krishna's starting to become more important in their life. But it's now, instead of being 100% material, now it's 90% material, 10 Krishna. Give it some more time, it's 80 material and 20 Krishna. And it just keeps going like that until you see after some time, then now it becomes, it's 60% Krishna and 40% material. So they're advancing. So that's the whole point of the association and all like that. So you don't have to worry that it's in the field of communication, so therefore it's bad. It's how you use it.
Maharaj, one question came, like this morning we had a discussion with Guru Chief, and he said that in order, he doesn't know basically successful radio Krishnas, in order to
get it run, you know, you need a popularity, like you mentioned, Maharaj. So, but one sense now, my question is that if we kind of think we do the Dharma a little more progressed way than here in Covadan, when festival is coming, they just put loudspeaker and higher and more volume, and doesn't matter about the audience. But it seems to be that the more adharmic you would do the radio station, so the more popular and the more arta on the sense of economical support would come. So how to kind of see this on the proper light? I understand that Krishna consciousness is difficult for everybody to reach, or shall we just make it so attractive that it attracts those masses, or how to solve the problem, what Guruji said?
Well, the point is how you're attracting, because that's always going to be the point. What Guruji's mentioning is that the common person is a materialist. Now, whether they are innocent or whether they're atheistic, now that's the next point. So of those who are atheistic, you can probably count them out. Right? So those who are going to be innocent, there you're going to be your audience. Right? So if you're running it as a business, you get as broad as you can. But now here, it's about Krishna, it'll have to be more narrow. So now the whole thing is that you have to see is what would they be interested in, right? Because, you know, it means if they're running music, then, you know, it's like nice kirtans. You know, you go through and choose nice segments of kirtans that have been very, very appreciative, you know, of the devotees that are there, you know, some, you know, nice musical arrangements that devotees have done with Krishna stuff, you know, nice things of a Prabhupada, you know, there's certain tracks and all that they might find very nice. And that, so you have your, you know, kind of music and that. Then you have to have some discussions here and there, either some presentations, or you have, interviews or things like that. But the thing is you're going to see is that, like he said, you have to see is how far you're going. It means if you're running it and it itself has to make money, it may or may not work. If you can somehow or another run it and then run it as a local station or something like that, because you have these big stations that go very broad and you have local stations. I think maybe it's AM and FM. I think AM are local stations. They don't go so far. You know, in the city, they'll go, FM will go much farther. So then it's just a matter of how, what you run and how you run it. But like he said, I think in the 70s, 80s, and maybe even into the 90s, you had Krishna radio stations, but they were run as preaching things, so they weren't there to make money. So that's how they were running. But if you have to make money off of them, that's another thing. You know, because from there, you know, you have book distribution, you have other things, you know, you can have programs, you invite people to the temple, you do all these different things, inform people of programs that are going on, you know, so it will benefit the overall. But as far as, like he said, you know, making it successful by great amounts of audience, that I'm not sure. You know, if you're very clever and all that, you can do. I mean, there are devotees who have very, very big podcasts. But then some of them you see is that they veer off into basically more new agey kind of thing like that. So how much Krishna is there, I don't know. So then it's just a matter of if you want to do it as preaching, just like you see Guruji, you know, is running the station. That's how he maintains himself. But for preaching, he actually has a center and devotees and does things more direct. You know, so whether you can get it to do something, you'd have to see, you know, you'd have to try. You know, if anyone has experience on how to make things work, then he's the man.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't like to take too much time. There is actually in Denmark, I met Jadu. He's maintained government is paying him even a salary for the thing, and it's since 1988. Is it Mahakarun, something like that? That year has been Radio Krishna going on, and he's fully maintained. That's his job by government. So some places it can work out.
In
But
Denmark, they don't get paid by the government, but to have a radio station, you're getting some grant from the government. So he's just tapping into that. But he's been doing it since the 80s, as we said.
Yes, you can do as long as you're comfortable, even if it goes out to some hundreds or some thousands, it's still a nice thing. It doesn't have to be, the regular radio station, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions like that. You just have to be comfortable that it may be a smaller thing. In other words, the more direct it is in Krishna consciousness, the smaller the audience. Like that. But it's a nice thing for devotees. They're driving to work, they can listen to the radio station or things like that. It can always be, and they're in the house, they're doing a cleaning or doing this and that, the laundry. They can listen, if you have nice things that devotees like to hear. And depending on what you do, you may get different age groups and different things as a whole. I'm sure there's a whole dynamic on what your station is presenting. And so what's your audience? Yeah. Is that okay?
Thank you. Very, very good.
Okay. Does Guruji want to add anything? Did we leave something out there? Guruji
Yeah,
left.
he's in the countryside with bad connection. That's the problem.
Oh, okay. So it's not that he got upset with what we said and all
He's ready to help with
that.
connection.
Said, so you want to say something? Yes, I'm leaving. Okay. Oh, he joined back. Okay. So he thought, okay, well, we shouldn't completely write them all off. Vaishnavs are compassionate. You're back.
You heard, Guruji, did you heard what we're discussing? I kind of stole a little time for that radio thing, but I think your connection is a little bad there, but I don't know how much you heard, but when we discuss with parents. Seems to be connection is.
Okay. Yeah, no, leave it. Okay, so then we'll continue with the, how much time do we have? Ah, yes. So, Raghunathji, if you continue with the purport.
A third-class devotee, therefore, has to receive the instruction of devotional service from the authority sources of Bhagavata. The number one Bhagavata is the established personality of devotee, and the other Bhagavatam is the message of God. The third-class devotee, therefore, has to go to the personality of devotee in order to learn the instructions of devotional service. Such a personality of devotee is not a professional man who earns his livelihood by the business of Bhagavata. Such a devotee must be a representative of Shukadeva Goswami, like Suta Goswami, and must preach the cult of devotional service for the all around benefit of all people. A neophyte devotee has very little taste for hearing from the authority. Such a neophyte devotee makes a show of hearing from the professional man to satisfy his senses. This sort of hearing and chanting has spoiled the whole thing, so one should be very careful about the whole the process. The holy message of Godhead has inculcated in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam are undoubtedly transcendental subjects, but even though they are so, such transcendental matters are not to be received from the professional man who spoils them as the serpent spoils milk simply the touch of his tongue. A sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedas and Vedic literature like the Upanishads, Vedanta, and other literatures left by the previous authorities or Goswamis for the benefit of his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And without hearing and following the instructions, the show of devotional service became worthless and therefore a sort of disturbance in a part of devotional service. Unless, therefore, devotional service is established on the principles of Shruti, Smriti, Purana, or Pancharatra authorities, to make show of devotional service should at once be rejected. An authorized devotee should never be recognized as a pure devotee. By assimilation of such messages from the Vedic literature, one can see the all-pervert localized aspect of the personality of Godhead within his own self constant. This is called samadhi. This is the end of
the purport. Yes, okay. So here we see that then Prabhupada's continuing on in the conversation that you're going to have, you know, it has to be based now. He's taking Rupa Goswami's verse, that Shruti Sriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina, that if it's not in line with these and heard from authorized devotees coming in the parampara, then it's simply going to be a disturbance to society because one's going to, you know, make up one's own interpretations and all that. So as you mentioned, that the neophyte then is, if the prominence is on the materialistic aspects, so they're going to tend to take those things that resonate in their materialistic aspects and try to present those as if they're the more important elements. So you're going to see is that, you know, in India, then you're going to have, you know, or amongst the Indians themselves, you know, those who are following the Vedas, that's going to be, you know, a particular group. So they have a common culture, you know, to some degree. And then within those, then those who are, you know, worshippers of Krishna or Rama or Vishnu or like this, the, in other words, those who are in the Vaishnava, or at least in general kind of Vaishnava aspect, then, you know, they're living their life, they have their occupations, they do whatever they do. And, you know, they do some worship, they have some consideration of the Lord, major festivals are taking part in all that. So you can say in that way, then they're neophyte devotees. Now Bhaktivinoda Thakur will then break down the devotees here. So that means we have the neophyte, the Madhyama and the Uttama, you know, are the first, second, and third class devotees. So he also brings up a way to divide is you have the Samanya Bhakta, or general devotee, and then you have Sampradayak devotee. So those who are just on that platform of hearing, I mean, having faith, associating with devotees like that, that technically then, and you know, you're doing some puja, some this, you go to the temple, you do those things, but they haven't committed to the sampradaya, the teachings are specifically lined, then that's general. So as we mentioned, basically all all Hindus that would identify as Vaishnav, you know, they're going to be Samanya. They're devotees. So the Hindu, so whatever people will say about the, you know, the Indians and all that, the ones that come around and all that, that's because they're devotees. So why would you make a distinction, you know, like that? Is that they're something less of devotees? But the point is that sampradayak means you're committed to. So we're committed to Prabhupada's teachings and how we're learning his books and the previous acharyas through seeing what Prabhupada is giving us. And in that light, also then appreciating, you know, outstanding points from the other sampradayas, like you see Prabhupada will quote from Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya or Raghavendra Acharya or Sridhar Swami, like this. And so they make some very nice points. And so we appreciate it because it's all within the Vaishnav fold, right? And they themselves are advanced. They're not general. They're sampradayic. And so that will be appreciated like that. And so either you are initiated or you're in pursuance of that, then it brings you in that line, right? But if you don't have a specific, you know, you'll hear from anybody anywhere, that's what Prabhupada's talking about. It'll just be a disturbance because you won't necessarily advance. You don't see the, you don't get the focus. You don't see that you have to follow one particular, you know, acharya and then like that, follow the line. And so the things that they do may not have, be advantageous for just moving forward in this devotional life. So devotees have to understand it's that simple. So they may think that they're different from the, you know, Hindu community, but they are as if they're fixed in Prabhupada's instructions. But if they're not, it's kind of like there's that and there's new agey stuff and whatever you get on the internet and it's all cool and this and that. What's the difference? It's just that you're just, you know, you're just, how you say, another form, you know, instead of the Hindus would be said based on the Veda, and this is based on New Age. But it's the same principle as that. It's just ordinary devotees. It's not actually sampradayic. So Prabhupada's pointing out that's going to be a disturbance to society because then anything goes. Whatever anybody's into and all that, and they could somehow or another make it look all right and all that. And so then we have. So you want to be careful of that, you know, that kind of aspect. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we have to see is that when all these things are mentioned in the Shastra, we may think, oh, they don't apply to us. But much of the time you find, no, they actually do. And so we just have to see, you know, it may not be in the same contract. We may not be bumping into a Shankarite sannyasi, and therefore we met a Mayavadi. But basically, most anybody who talks about spiritual life, they never go beyond the idea of Brahman and getting out of the material world. They just don't. So also, if they think that's as high as that, that's the Mayavadi. They think it's all illusion, it's Mayavadi. Like that. You know, so that's the point. So Brahmavadis is how often you actually bump into a real Brahmavadi. You know, it's all Brahman. So Krishna is also Brahman. The deity is Brahman. The Lord's form is Brahman. So they're not Mayavadis. Mayavadis means the form is illusion. You know, Buddhist, it's illusion. You know, Brahmavadis, no, it's not illusion, it's Brahman. It's an illusion if you think it's something else other than Brahman. That's what the illusion. And we'll say the same thing. But they'll stop at that point. Then we'll come up to the point of the localized form of the Lord, how he controls all his energies. And then that is then the expansion of Krishna, you know, the supremely independent, you know, controller and enjoyer. And in his pastimes with his devotees. And so to take care of the creation as he is God, he does that as Paramatma. Right? So we see Bhagavan. So then these other features have their place. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like I think there was a parody, and I think they were doing a parody on the life of Jesus. And somehow or another, somebody became very prominent. And at some point, he had many followers, but then something came up, and there became a division between the followers, and it became two groups. I don't remember what was the item, but they had two items of this person who, you know, somehow or another they saw as a great, you know, personality, the spiritual leader. So one of them had a pot. It may have been a little clay pot that they had drunk out of or something. And the other group had, I'm not sure what it was, but maybe it was like a sock or a shoe, you know, or something like that. And so it became the two divisions of the pot and the sock. And they're, you know, fighting with each other, but neither of them are talking about the instructions. They never are, you know, there's no basis for that. They're not taking it to any depth. So that's what one wants to be careful of. One gets distracted by, you know, all these things. Oh, we're Westerners. We don't get into it. That's a distraction. Where are we talking about Krishna? We know we're Westerners. We know like that. So, you know, tell us something. Tell them something we don't know. You could go up to a Karmi. Oh, we're Westerners. You know, we're not Indians. And they'll go, yeah, so? You know, they won't consider that spiritual. So it's a mundane distraction. So we have to be very, very careful that it's based on Shruti, Smriti, Pancharatra, Puranas, like this, the authorized Vedic literatures. Otherwise, and as we've heard it from the Acharyas, otherwise it's a disturbance in society. So just because we're devotees doesn't mean that we're any different than the Hindus that some don't appreciate, that whole, you know, Krishna West doesn't appreciate. What's the difference? You know, they follow the Varnashram as they please for their own benefit to, you know, get ahead in the world, and these others follow New Age. And that's their cultural basis. And, you know, they both do something with, they both show up at the temple on Janmashtami. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is the problem. If it's not based off of Shruti, Smriti, and Puranas, then and the Pancharatra, then it's just going to be a disturbance. It's not going to give you, it's not going to be like the verses pointing out, the serious student. It's not going to bring about the serious student. Otherwise, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's just, Prabhupada didn't make this society to make more Hindus, right? You know, because the amount of Hindus we're making compared to the amount of Hindus that were already there before we started, you can't even compare. You know what I'm saying? There's 1 billion Hindus. You know, we're not coming anywhere near that. So it's not like we're doing something great. And when Prabhupada started, I think, I'm not sure how much was there, but I think it was in the 70s, there may have been around 800 or 900 million people, you know, in India. And so then, you know, and now they've expanded to 1.4 billion. So, you know, 500, 600 million people they've expanded in the last 50 years. You know, and of that, as we said, then 300 million, probably another bit of this and that, you know, so some hundreds like that. So 900 like that. So they've expanded by some hundreds of millions, the Hindus. And so that's not a glory. Just that we've made more Hindus. No, we have to make more serious students. Because within those Hindus, then you'll find, yes, there's the Shris, the Madhvas, the Nimbarkas, you know, the Vallabhalai, you know, that they're more serious than your general Hindus. And, you know, they like that. And within those, they'll be more serious like that. So That's not the glory. It's, oh yes, I have, you know, so many people come to my yoga studio, but do any of them chant Hare Krishna? Do anyone know about Krishna? No, we don't want to scare them away. So then, yeah, so you're running a nice yoga studio. Great. If it maintains your life and you can be a nice devotee, fine. But stop calling it preaching. Just call it a business. You know, which is fine. I mean, you have an occupation. One's a grihastha, one has to maintain oneself. That's fine. You know, it's just like someone goes to the university, gets a PhD, and he teaches at the university, and that's how he maintains himself. That's fine. It's a perfectly bona fide occupation. But to say, no, I'm getting a PhD to preach, and then they say, so how's the preaching going? Are you telling them about Krishna? Oh, no, you can't talk about Krishna. Then they'll kick me out of the academy. So then how is it for preaching? As a job, fine. As preaching, forget it. So we have to see is that you just have to see is that if you can have influence, then you do. But otherwise, then, you know, what's the point? Does that make sense? Like that, you have to see is what's preaching. Just like, let's say, devotee is a politician and are working in the political field. Now, they themselves are practicing Krishna consciousness. Now, whether they can have any effect on the people in their, you know, in their constituency, that's another thing. But the decisions they make on what to do and not do as laws and stuff like that, that'll be based on their Krishna consciousness. But whether they're able to discuss Krishna consciousness with the general public, that's another thing. So for them, it's an occupation, right? That's how they live. That's what they can do. They maintain themselves and that, and they make their own personal life and as much as they can in their occupation, decisions based on Krishna consciousness. But you can't say it's preaching. It's an occupation, which is fine because, you know, grihasthas need an occupation, so it's fine, you know. But one has to be very, very careful of just throwing everything. Samkirtana means the greater thing, but you have to see it actually is kirtan. Does that make sense? So that's why then it must be for the sincere, the serious student, then it's based on the parampara, and their teachings of the Vedic literature. So in other words, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So it all has to be based on Shastra. It's not Guru is speaking from Shastra. That's their position as Guru. They're not just Guru just because Prabhupada's Guru because he speaks from Shastra. That's the whole point. And so whatever he's saying is Shastra. So if you go against that, you're going against Shastra. But so many other gurus, they're just speaking whatever they feel like and throwing in a few Gita verses so that people think it's spiritual. Then guru's more important than Shastra. But here is Shastra is. But our approach to Shastra is only through Guru. Right? So we only know Shastra from Guru, just like we only know our father from the mother. Right? The child has no way to find out the father unless the mother says this is the father. You know, so therefore we only know about Shastra, we only know about pure devotion because Prabhupada's pointed it out. Otherwise, people have been reading Bhagavad Gita for hundreds of years in the West, but no one's understood pure devotional service. It's only when Prabhupada points it out, then it becomes obvious. Any questions on this or no? Okay, so then Raghunathji, maybe then continue with the next verse.
Ata pumbir vichashreshta varnashrama vipagashah svanustitasya dharmasya samsthira haritoshanam. All based among the twice born is therefore concluded the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own vocation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of God. Human society all over the world is divided into four castes and four orders of life. The four castes are the intelligent caste, the martial caste, the productive caste, and the laborer caste. These castes are classified in the terms of one's work and qualification and not by the birth. Then, again, there are four orders of life, namely student life, the householder's life, the retired, and the devotional life. In the best interest of human society, there must be such divisions of life, otherwise no social institution can grow in a healthy state. And in each, in every one of the above-mentioned divisions of life, the aim must be to please the supreme authority, the personality of God. This institutional function of human society is known as the system of Varnashram Dharma, which is quite natural for the civilized life. The Varnashram institution is constructed to enable one to realize the absolute truth. It is not for artificial dominion of one division over other. When the aim of life, for example, realization of the absolute truth, is missed by too much attachment for the indriya priti or sense gratification, as already discussed herein before, the institution of the Varnashrama is utilized by a selfish man to pose an artificial predominance over the first section. In the Kali Yuga or in the age of quarrel, this artificial predominance is already current, but the saner section of the people know it well that the divisions of caste and order of life are mean for smooth social intercourse and high thinking self-realization, and not for the actual cause. Herein, the statement of Bhagavatam is that the highest aim of life or the highest perfection of the institution of the Varnashram Dharma is to cooperate jointly for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. This is also conferred in the Bhagavad Gita or certainty. It's the end of the group.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, so we're carrying on in this line as, okay, you know, as we see in like Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is opening up the conversation, you know, first, you know, very enthusiastic about performing his duties, then getting very bewildered when he sees his duties will mean the destruction of his whole dynasty. And then he starts preaching all kinds of new age and philosophy. So Krishna then starts to speak to him about spiritual understanding. And so the second chapter then discusses, you know, about that there is spiritual life, and then how to analyze things in context of that, the Shankhya. And so then Arjuna's then question is, okay, so then someone who does understand and appreciate spiritual life, how does he behave? How does he do? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? How does he dress? How does he, right? So then that's then naturally what's coming up here, is that having said the serious student, but then how does that serious student, how does he, what is his lifestyle? What's the basis? Right? So therefore, it's going to be human, right? Human life is meant for elevating the consciousness. And so then human life, we see is that Varnashram is the natural structure for it. As Prabhupada mentioned, all over the world. Now, it's just a matter of whether it's scientific or not. So for those who follow the Vedas, it's scientific. For those who don't follow the Vedas, it's not scientific, because those points he pointed out, he mentioned about the intellectual class, the martial class, the productive class, and then I didn't quite catch the last word that Prabhupada did there, but he just means the general, you know, the labor class or, you know, some whatever, the, you know, different words you could use. And so no one who understands how the social systems function and all that would disagree with those four. You know, they may ask about some things. Those are divisions within these four, but it's very obvious. You're either working in the intellectual field, you're working in the administrative field, you're working in the economic field, or you're assisting the others, either directly or you're assisting those who indirectly by providing goods that they need, though you're not necessarily working for someone. Like that, you know, like you might be a carpenter and on your own you just make carpentry things and sell it. Someone would say, oh, you're a businessman. Actually, no, he's just an artist, because he just makes stuff, and as he makes it, he sells it. If he was a businessman, why would he be working alone, right? You know, his family, he would, with his profits, hire more people, get cheaper wood, cut costs, cut all the, that he was a businessman. But instead, he tries to do very nice things, this and that, at his own speed and all that. But if he's a businessman, he'd get it done as quickly as possible. So that's going to be the point, is that one has to understand what are the characters. And as Prabhupada pointed out, it's not by birth. You know, birth may have something to do with it, but at the same time, it doesn't have to. So we'll go by what they turn out. So let's say the child's born in a family of doctors, both parents are doctors or like that, and they become a doctor, then you say, yeah, but it's because he became a doctor, you see him in that way. But if with time he becomes something else, then you take him by that. He becomes a musician, he's a musician, he's an artist. Like that, it doesn't matter what the parentage is. So one has to appreciate that the devotees, then this is just the structure you work at, and Prabhupada pointed out. It's not about artificially one group trying to control the other group and all that, because that's what goes on. When you say, well, the Vedic Brahmins try to control everything, then you see there's time like Kartavirya Arjuna, the Kshatriyas try to control everything. You know, so there's always going to be this thing in the modern age, the Vaishyas, you know, they came up, the bourgeois, they try to control everything. And then now, you know, with the more socialistic kind of things, now the general populace tries to control everything. So these are all artificial, whichever one you do, because they'll point out, oh, the Brahmins shouldn't be on the top, but yeah, they should, the Shudras. You know, it's just like it's artificial. So therefore, you want to function. This is just how you situate, because everyone's specialized. It means we talk about, say, the devotees, you know, we'll talk about being professional. And professional means you're specialized in a particular area so that you can become very good at it. What's Varnashram? You're a professional intellectual. You're a professional intellectual, I mean an administrator. You're a professional, you know, working in the field of economics. You're a professional in working in something that supports these others. So they only see as professional, or you're a devotee, you're a professional devotee. It means this is what you do full time. We're professional spiritualists. This is what we do as a living. We do spiritual life and Krishna maintains us. So the whole point is that to reject Varnashram means you reject professional Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. You only acknowledge professional Shudras, because modern professionals generally are Shudras. Right. Does that make sense? You know, let's say you have a doctor, he works at a big hospital and all that. He's hired, he gets a salary. He's a Shudra. He's doing Brahminical work. You know, it has Brahminical, but his occupation is actually that of a Shudra. Now, if you have a doctor who runs his own little clinic, you know, down on the corner, out of his house, you know, he's dedicated part of his house to seeing patients and all that, and he goes around to people's houses and all that. People generally don't look at him as a professional. They'll say, "Oh, he's a small doctor. He's not a big doctor." So, in other words, they only acknowledge professionals that are Shudras. You know, like the middle management in the corporation, Shudras. You know, the bureaucrats in the government, Shudras. So we have to appreciate, is that why would that be there? Why, you know, how is that scientific? You know, we claim to be scientific. How is that scientific? The division's already there. Why not get Brahmas to do Brahma stuff and have them stop doing other people's stuff? Right? The teachers, if they're becoming political, then what's the point? They're supposed to not be political. They're just supposed to teach what's correct. You know, leave politics to the administrators. You know, Vaishyas are supposed to sell goods. They're not supposed to be political. Right? You buy potatoes because you need potatoes, not because these are leftist potatoes or these are conservative potatoes or, you know, things like that. No, you know, it's just, you know, you buy them because they're potatoes. Right? So that's the thing, is that it means everybody has their thing. You stick to that. But when you mix it up, it becomes unscientific. When Vaishyas run hospitals, no one can afford health care. When Brahmins run hospitals, everyone can afford. Right? Like that. You know, when Shudras run the government, everyone is harassed. When Kshatriyas run the government and they're properly trained, then everybody's peaceful. You know, so like that, it's about being professional. It's about being scientific. You know, that's the thing. People like the word scientific. They like the word professional. That's Varnashram. Right? But as pointed out, even everything's going so nicely, if you're not trying to please Krishna by the performance of your duties in Varna and Ashram, then it's a waste of time. So in other words, human life is meant, in other words, humans follow Varnashram, but human life is meant for self-realization. So if your following of Varnashram isn't being engaged in somehow or another helping you attain self-realization, it's a waste of time. So, you know, it's just like you're in the kitchen to cook, but if you're in the kitchen and don't cook, what's the point? You know, if you're going to hang out, kitchens aren't great places to hang out. But if you just want to talk with a friend and talk some prajalpa and this, you don't hang out in the kitchen. There's no place to sit down. It's got all sharp corners and that. You go out into the, you know, the living room and sit in the couch or something. That's the place to sit for that. So that's the element, is that all these social points, whatever they are, if you're not using them for Krishna, then they're a waste of time, whatever they are. So that's the point that's being made. So we saw the serious student then is going to base everything on Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and that, and for the purpose of realizing Bhagavan, then his lifestyle is going to be that of Varnashram. But it's still only for, he remains a serious student. He doesn't become distracted. Just like he doesn't become distracted by karma, jnana, or yoga, he doesn't become distracted by the Varnashram. So in any case, then he remains as a serious student. Oops. Okay. Is that good? Any questions on that, or? No. Okay. Any comments on that?
Well, no? I have a comment. I met one lady, Mataji, in Mayapur recently, And she also said that she has this experience. You go to the GBC and then the V word is forbidden to speak about. So that's,
yeah. So what to do? At the same time, is they'll replace it by some so-called thing, but you can't make a whole complete social system off of bureaucrats. It's not complete. And the fun part is actual good bureaucrats means the ones that are good at it, they're actually from the Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya background, but they're doing Shudra work. That's why they have the brains, right? So in other words, the lowest level of bureaucracy, then they're just Shudras because they just push papers around, do this, that, blah. But the guys that really know how to do stuff, the more accomplished they are, they have to be from some higher level to be able to function in that way. Like that. So you still, it's still based on the Varnashram. It's just that this, so basically it's an ignorance that they reject the system. There's no other reason to reject it. Because guaranteed the ones that says, oh, you can't say that, why not? You know, do they know Varnashram? Can they discuss it? And can they distinguish between Daiva Varnashram and Varnashram? So then what do you use? If you don't use Daiva Varnashram, then what do you use? Right? Krishna West claims they're universal. Right? They claim they're international. So that means the social system that they use, you know, for occupation and lifestyle, then is American culture, right? And of American, it's not East Coast, it's not Southern, it's not Northwest, it's only Californian. And of Californian, it's not the Northern California, because San Francisco tends to have a little bit of culture, it's Southern California. So in other words, Krishna West means the whole world should follow Southern Californian culture. And they're trying to, and how that's not artificial. They're saying, oh, but we're not Indians. It's like, who's from Southern California? How much of the world is from Southern California? You know, as you pointed out, the whole of South America means Chile and Peru are east of New York. Right? And Prabhupada said, Bengal is east, and the farther west you go, it gets more degraded. So that means South America is actually in a position of being less degraded than North America by inherent mentality. So, and then in North America, California is all the way on the west. So it's the most degraded of all of them. And anybody knows, if you ask, you know, Hollywood culture and California, Southern California, everybody knows it's degraded. You know, if you have a person in Hollywood, you know, if you look at their history and they've been married for the last 40 years, it's like, what? But you read about a guy who's been married 5 times in the last 30 years, that's pretty standard. So the whole point is why would that be? And why there? If we're going by West, then we should, you know, Burmese culture should be the international. That's they'll be the most degraded. You know, or at least the Orient in general. That would be, that's more Western, because Bengal is east. So that means anything farther on the map, farther east, is actually west. Does that make sense? So you go Bengal, then you go to the Middle East, that's farther west, then to Europe and Africa, that's farther west again, then South America, farther west, North America, more west than that. Then you get to, you know, how you say, China and Japan and Philippines and all those guys like that. They're the farthest west. So actually, they're the real Westerners. So then wouldn't their culture then, if we're following that logic of that somehow or another Southern California is the, you know, the cat's meow for all this, wouldn't the Orientals be the ones? You know, because you look at it, they're the best in everything. The Asians, that, you know, if they're Asians at school, they always get the best grades. They get this, that, you know, so they're going to be, you know, why wouldn't you use that? So it doesn't make any sense. So it's unscientific their rejection of Varnashram is 100% unscientific. You know, and if you say, but they're devotees, okay, granted, sorry, 108% unscientific. They're devotees, you know, we should use an auspicious number. Right? You know, so that's the whole point is that, no, Prabhupada's there. He's dealing with these Westerners. He's there in the West. It's not bewildering. He came alone to New York and started an international society. Name me one person today who's saying that we don't accept Varnashram that could do what Prabhupada did. Get on a boat, spend whatever it is, 30, 40 days getting across over there, end up in some place up north, find that's not working, go into New York on their own. On their own. And set up there. So Prabhupada's light years ahead of them, even on the material platform of making anything work. So they're fools if they think, oh, they're more intelligent than Prabhupada. Oh, Prabhupada said this, okay, in the 70s you could say this, but now you can. They're the same people talking the same. The stuff they talk now is the same thing I heard as a teenager talked by the hippies. And I was a younger hippie. Older hippies were in their 20s. Right? So, 6, 8 years older than me. You catch it? What the point I'm saying? In other words, those same hippies back in their 20s and in the 60s and 70s or whatever it is when they joined, those are the ones now that are in their 70s and 80s. You get a little bit higher, they're above the hippies. So guys like Bhavananda and Umapati Maharaj and that, they weren't hippies. They were the generation before. They don't talk this nonsense. They don't understand it. They knew Prabhupada. They grew up with Prabhupada. And so they just do what Prabhupada does, and they're fine. So in other words, those who joined before, you know, in 1970, you know, like that, okay, leave them alone, especially before 68 and before, yeah, you just leave them alone. They don't understand Varnashram because they just knew Prabhupada before they kind of understood that it was something to be established. So they just do what Prabhupada did. You know, they just have the simple, you know, chant and this and that and Hari Bol. But these others, it's just ignorance.
I was reading also in the university book about Hinduism, and then actually they said Hinduism outside of India. So interestingly, it's that the Varnashrama is not, they can't apply that outside of India. All these, you know, generations who have moved out and stayed for generations outside.
Because they don't want to. They're enamored by the West. So that's why Shruti Smriti Puranadi, that's why that verse is making that point. Because they base their basis on the material, not on the spiritual. So that's the point. Neophytes will take the material as the more important. The Madhyamas don't do that. The Madhyamas, it has to be Shastra, otherwise they don't buy it. You know, just like Kshatriyas, they don't buy it unless it's Shastra.
Yeah, it's rare to find someone who cares about what Shastra says nowadays.
So what does that say? What mentality are we working on?
I don't know.
So that's the whole point, is that the devotee, by being absorbed in Krishna, works on the Brahminical platform. But if they choose anything else to work at, then they're not working on the Brahminical platform. You know, and you're born Shudra. Then you can go up, you know, let's say your parents are Brahmins, you're born Shudra, but by association and by that regulation, then you pick up the Brahminical inclination. You have the nature for it, you just take it up. Now, what if your parents are Malechas and Yavanas? So then where do you go? And then you grew up as hippies. And Prabhupada compared hippie with being crazy. They were used as synonyms. So then, you know, what's so glorious? you know, because, oh, it's not practical. GBC doesn't accept. Yeah, okay, GBC doesn't accept. Prabhupada does. The Acharyas do. Krishna does. And Kali Yuga belongs to Krishna, not to us. We may be in it, but it's not ours. We're not in control of it. You say Kali Raj controls it, and yeah, what has he tried to do? He tries to get rid of Varnashram. Why? Because then this human life becomes stable, steady, and you can elevate consciousness. What's Kali Raj's duty? To make everything degraded. So the first thing you do is get rid of Varnashram. Get rid of Varnashram, get rid of Harinam, get rid of book distribution, get rid of, you know, all those kind of things. Get rid of devotional dress, get rid of, you know, whatever it is that we do. Then, who are we working for? Yes. So on that, I say, wonderfully uplifting note, we'll end the class here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Hare Hare.